Absolute pleasure to be speaking with you. I've been a fan for years, 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 going back to Cashback. But I saw the cut. I absolutely loved it. I got to speak to Stuart Michael Thomas about him working with Lauren Bolf on this. So I'm in your world. Thank you for joining me here. Well, everybody, thank you so much for joining the Go See Talk podcast. My name is Mark Chattardini. We are going to get in the square circle with Sean Ellis, director, cinematographer, writer. He is a dynamo, a triple threat. We're going to go 10 rounds with him. He's been in the business long enough, he'd probably take down anybody. Sean, absolute pleasure, pleasure, pleasure speaking with you. How are things in your world?
Good, thanks, Mark. Getting ready for the release, so things are very busy.
I would imagine. It is a beast of a film. The key to any creative is to put something on screen that is bulletproof. And I want to say that when you have a cast as tight as yours, there is absolutely 100% legitimacy. Nobody is even questioned. Even when it's Manny or Paolo or Caitlin, like everybody is pitch perfect. How is this a dream project casting for you?
Yeah, it was actually. I mean, I think if you cast well, your job's done. 50%, you're 50% done. You know, it's like if you cast badly, then you're going to be fighting those decisions, and you know, it's just not the way of producing something that is, you know, is going to be fulfilling in some respects. So yeah, cast is halfway there, and you know, Orlando, you know, was a really interesting choice for this project. And when Mark spoke to me about it and mentioned him, he's like, you got to speak to him about it because he's, you know, you'll see how committed he is. So I had this conversation with Orlando, and he was telling me what he was doing and how he was training. And I guess my big question to Orlando was, you know, you just don't look like a boxer. How do we fix that? You know, so Marc Coulier came in and did some amazing, you know, special effects makeup on his face. And he had a head cast, and he did various noses that we could look at. And it changed the look of his face quite drastically. It was quite amazing. And then we were lucky enough to get John. And I'd spoken a number of weeks with John about the script, and I understood that he was sort of slowly forming a process of who this Boz character was, which was really interesting. And then I started speaking to Katrina's agent, and then Katrina read, and she said she really liked it. And so then it suddenly all started to fall into place. And then, you know, the other parts like Mohammed and Adonis and Ed and Kane, those guys, you know, and Claire Dunn, just amazing, amazing set of people to work with, and super talented, you know. So very blessed.
Even some of the smallest gestures in the film, you know, speak volumes. When Boxer is going for his photo shoot, and they ask him how he's feeling, he goes, grand, strong. And, you know, are you think you're going to make weight? And in the back, Boz is just sitting there with an ice cream cone going like this. And it just, oh, God, like every second of this film just like seeped into my pores. I loved it.
That's a funny story, actually, because that day we were shooting and it was super hot. And Orlando wanted to, it was at the time when he was putting the weight back on, so he was allowed to eat at that point. And he said, you know, all the crew was very hot. And he said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get an ice cream van to come and give all the crew ice creams. And he paid for this like ice cream van truck, like to turn up. And like, we all got like 10 minutes to go and get ice creams in between what we were doing and stuff. And then we were shooting this take, and John had gone out for his ice cream, and he just thought it'd be funny if he came in and did the take with his ice cream. And that was the one we kept, you know, even to the point where, you know, Orlando was like laughing. He's like, he's got an ice cream. And he's like, and we were laughing at it, and we were like, are we going to keep that? And ultimately, I think we did, you know, because it said a lot about his like absolute non-caring of the situation that Boxer had found himself in as far as losing weight goes.
And I really appreciate, I want to say love is not a big enough word to incorporate my feelings, but how this movie moved me, because it is such a, it's a departure. You know, it's a boxing movie without any boxing in it. It's a horror movie. It's kind of like a deep into mental health and psyche. And I mean, there's just so much to unpack. And I love a lot of the discussions, like when Caitlin says, this hunger never leaves you, you just have to live with it. And the boxer says, I thought when I got a little older, would be less hungry, but the older I get, the hungrier I get. So, I mean, it speaks on multiple levels other than just being a sports movie. What were really some of the themes that kind of hit home with you? And now that you see the picture, you know, out in the world, what are you really, you know, so glad you grabbed onto?
Well, I think it was also about the destructive drive that some people have in order to succeed, and at what cost will you succeed? And you know, people think that success is going to make them happy. And so I think it's a film about understanding that what you want and what you need are two different things. And I think he, on his journey, discovers not only that he's been functioning as a very damaged individual because of his past, but his drive to succeed in what he thinks he wants is not only gonna hurt himself, but hurt all the people that love him. And I think the other thing that it talks volumes about is that you can't help the people you love. Often you just can't. It's up to them in order to, you know, be the ones to say, I need help. You know, and I think that's an important aspect to this film, you know, being it being okay to ask for help and say I'm not okay. But I think, you know, especially in the sport of boxing, where there's a lot of male toxicity, it's very difficult for those sort of guys to be in touch with something that is, you know, emotional. They have to shut that down in order to do what they do, or they often do what they do because they've been traumatized as youngsters. So, you know, it's an interesting meditation on that, I think.
Yeah, and there's other things too, how the visuals mirror the narrative and the themes. You know, working with Justin Bull and Mark Lane's story, it seemed like the more pounds that Boxer lost, the more people in his life were lost. And I love that sort of parallel. And you know, you do some absolutely beautiful cinematic work, whether it's Cashback or the robbery scene from Metro Manila or the action scenes from Anthropoid. But you know, this movie needed to have also a layer of non-linear storytelling. So in you know, retrospect, how did you see it all splayed out? You know, was it as easy as putting these pieces together, or did you really have to chop it up to get, you know, what we all saw on the screen?
Well, a lot of it was there in the script, you know, and you do a budget and a schedule based on what you have in the script. But then obviously you have what you've shot, and then you go in the edit room, and a lot of the time it's just moving stuff around to figure out what, you know, what works. And I know the version that we took to TIFF last year was slightly different, and it had more flashbacks and some more disturbing sequences about his childhood and the fact that his mom kind of sold him, and also that his mom was kind of quite present in the present day as a ghost, and he would see her in different places kind of looking at him. And we sort of stripped some of that back, because I think looking at the overall film, we realized that, you know, Orlando's performance was so strong that it just needed to sit, you know, front and center. We didn't really need those crutches, you know, the crutches of that kind of backstory and that ghost story that was sort of creeping into the cut as we finished it. So yeah, there were some last minute changes, and I think a lot of the time there's these shots of him as boxer breaking the fourth wall and looking at the audience, and I they were a new addition, and I really love those, because I think it's like him not only looking into himself and him seeing himself look back at him, but he's also looking at the audience. So in a weird way, he's sort of asking them, you know, am I bad? Is this right? You know, it's almost a judgment. It's like, so I think some of those are probably some of the strongest visual aspects of the movie.
Well, what you said about having to lose some of the mother scenes there's a certain flash in the desert that shows something from his past. Was that kind of a remnant from that thematic structure?
That actually just tied into the fact that he's talking about burying the fat and burying the past that's dragging him down, and is, you know, obviously the guilt that he had or the trauma that he had of what happened to him and his mother in the 80s in Ireland, in Northern Ireland, weighs heavily on him. So that's part of him trying to bury his past in a weird way. Yeah, that shot gets quite a freaky reaction from some of the audience. Actually, yeah, it's quite fun.
Well, I'm curious about two specific sequences in the film. One is very short, you wouldn't even notice, where Boxer is in the bathtub. It looks like you desaturated him. And once the water hits him, it looks like the blood kind of comes back to him. Did you do any sort of color work to kind of make him in that freak out moment between Lupe and Boz? Because it seemed like that very last scene where he got lifted up, his face was a little more flush.
Yeah, we just in the DI, we just got a window over his face and desaturated the color from his face, so he looked really like he was out of it.
Okay.
Expression that Mo just says, "Jesus, man, he looks like fucked." and then Boz says that kind of really dark line, "If you got a car here," which just, you know, I think he was already planning, like he was already going to go and bury him in the desert. You know, there was something. I mean, I think there was even an extra line. He was like, "Yeah," and he goes, "Is it hatchback?" And he was like, he dropped the hatchback bit because I think it was a bit obvious, but it was like, you could see that his brain was going, "We ain't calling an ambulance. You know, you got a car, we're going to like get rid of him." So yeah, it was kind of, but yeah, that color, that was a colorization thing that we did in the post production of it.
Okay. Well, the other one too was when Boz puts Boxer in a headlock in the hallway, and you've got the stair sign blinking green, and it seems like a lot more light is coming from different ambient places. And then in the headlock, the camera turns. So I think it's visually, it's kind of interesting. And I was just curious, you know, how the green worked and, you know, the twisting of the camera, how you made that all come together.
The scene before, the green came from the scene before, and in the script it was like, you know, because of the drugs, like the colors are exaggerated. I think that's how it was described in the script. And I don't know why, I just said on the day, I went to Mark and I said, "What about if we shoot this scene absolutely with green light? Like, you know, because it's sort of sickly, that color." And he goes, "Well, that sounds good." So we did, you know, we threw up a couple of gelled green lights, and it looked really strong. So I said, "Okay, great, we're going to shoot that. We're going to shoot that scene green." And then the next day, obviously, because we were shooting in reverse chronological order, the next day was the scene before, which was, you know, the scene after, which is him in the corridor. So just before the full green scene. And I started saying, "Well, it'd be kind of cool if we introduce the green here, you know, like it's coming in." And so I said to my gaffer, "We got some lights that like we could just flash on them, so you get this sort of idea that there's an electrical problem." And so he said, "Yeah, we can do this green flash with this light." So then in the script, it said the corridor rotates like 360 degrees. And I think they were referencing kind of, Christopher Nolan's movie Inception. And I was like, "Well, I think our whole budget was probably the catering budget on that movie." So I just said, "Well, look, we don't have the budget to rotate that. And I wouldn't feel comfortable about doing that anyway. So why don't we come up with a different way?" So I said, "Is there a Steadicam operator that can come in tomorrow and that's got a 360 rig? And maybe we can just rotate it with the camera, because that would disorientate it. It's not anamorphic, it's widescreen, and in the cinema it will look really kind of disorientated." So we had a Steadicam operator come in, and he said, "Okay, yeah, great. I understand what you're doing." And he said, and I said, "So how do we operate the rotation?" He said, "Well, I do all the thing because it when he falls, I've got to go down with him. I'll give you my phone, and when you do this, it rotates it. And if you do this, it rotates it the other way." So I was a bit like, "Oh, okay." So I think on the first try we did it, they were flashing green lights and it weren't strong enough. And I kind of messed up this. And so he said, "Okay, well, let's do it again." And I'm thinking, we're going to be here all day. And then on the second take, the green lights were really strong and they looked quite good. And then I started rotating this and I kind of liked what I was seeing on the monitor. So I carried on. And then he grabs him, puts him in the headlock, and I just carry on rotating and it went round. And then he drops him and he went down. And we called cut and the operator went up and he said, that looked really like if we'd actually practiced and rehearsed that, it would have taken us 2 weeks and we still probably wouldn't have got what we got there. And it was the second take. It was one of those magic, fairy dust moments where the law of creation came in and just said, you can have that shot.
Well, I think to piggyback on a line that that Boz says, he goes, "There's people in this world who see forks everywhere and people who are streamlined." It sounds like you are in the latter category. But be honest with me, Sean. Are you more of like a this or that, or are you like, "I know what I want, gotta get it, gotta get it, gotta get it"?
I'm pretty straight, but then I can get taken off that path pretty quick. I do suffer from the squirrel syndrome, so I have to be careful. My ADD brain has to be quite careful that I'm not squirreled too much. But generally when I'm working, I'm, because I'm operating and I'm the DP and I'm the director and often on the writer, though not on this, but it keeps you very, very focused on everything that you need to do. And it, I don't know, it just I'm able to keep all those eggs in that basket for some reason. I have problems when I have less to do for some weird reason. Like I've done films where I'm not the DP and I'm sitting on the monitor and I'm just sort of I'm not there anymore. I'm gone. And that's not, they're like, "Oh shit, were we rolling? Oh yeah, we called action." "Oh, okay." I was like, so yeah, I think the busier I am and the more pressure I put on myself, the more I'm able to focus. So yeah, I guess as long as it's done in a way that is not like it's done in the movie, which is sort of detrimental to what he's doing, but as long as it's moving forward in the right direction, I'm okay like that.
Well, I have to thank you for all the work you've given us over the years. And I think of all the funniest scenes in my entire life, nothing stands out to me more than the slap scene in Cashback, where he says, "Grab my arm." And I, without fail, that will be like Mel Brooks level humor. Just it sticks with me. As does the scarecrow scene from The Curse. I have never seen a more horrific lawn decoration in my life. So you just like your what you put on screen is built into my head. But that's really a long-winded way of saying thanks. But I think it's beautiful poetry. The philosopher Ben Willis once said, "It takes approximately 500 pounds to crush a human skull, but the human emotion is much more delicate thing." And I think there's beautiful poetry having come from 2004's Cashback to 2024's The Cut. Within 20 years, you're able to focus on these worlds of outsiders and people struggling and kind of like on the fringes and just these entities who have so much character. And I think how do you find that as the last question? How do you look for that in a character? How do you is that your really is that your MO or am I digging here?
I don't know. I think people say what is the common thread between the movies that I've made, and the only thing I can come up with is sacrifice. Ultimately, I think there's always a sort of element of sacrifice, whether the character has to sacrifice something in order to get what they want, or or whether the story itself, like Anthropoid, is about the actual sacrificial act of defiance against, you know, a regime. So yeah, I think that's the common thread. But you know, obviously you're looking for material that talks to you, and you're looking for material that you can explore that hopefully will give you answers to where you are in life and the things that you're personally struggling for, and the things that you want to say something about. So, you know, and ultimately you hope that you're just going to make a good film that people, I mean, I ultimately just make films that I want to see. You know, weirdly, I just, I think the minute you second guess an audience, or you try and go, I want to make a film because that, you know, I think the audience would like to see this, or this because it was really successful and people seem to like these kind of movies, so let's make that. That's a mistake, I think. And ultimately, I am the audience. And so I guess I make films for myself and the sort of films that I would like to go and see. So I guess that's the only way I guess it can be done from my point of view.
Talk about a crown jewel, Sean. Everyone check out The Cut on September 5th. And Sean Ellis, thank you so much for your time.